Hey guys, it's Kirk and Hector live from QB Connect here in San Jose. Hector, what's up?
Hey Kirk, what's up? It's been 2 days of conferencing. Again, we get to see each other and check out different sessions, teach different sessions, and learn about all the new things about QuickBooks Online and the QuickBooks Online ecosystem and how Intuit is helping the community and the small business users get better. So have you taken any sessions yourself, or can you talk about your session?
Yeah, I can talk about my session. Unfortunately, I have not really had much time to go to sessions myself. I did jump in on the end of one that was a social media marketing session that was really good. So you ever walk in on a session at the end and you can just tell, like, the last 10 minutes you're like, oh my goodness, I should have been here for the whole time. And it was not so much, it was the topic, but it was more the presenter.
Yeah,
presenter was just nailing it. So I have that
the name
not on my head, but I'll post it later anyway. So
so in those 10 minutes that you walked in, what was the discussion? What was happening that made you feel that this was like a really good session?
Just number one, it was a good speaker. Okay, great stage presence, good voice, a speaker that you enjoy seeing. So one of those speakers where it really doesn't matter the topic, just the presentation ability was there.
Yeah.
Two, I felt like the speaker had very well prepared. Okay,
yeah.
The slides were excellent. Actually had some statistics. So it was apparently it was a marketing session, but I walked in on the last piece, which was on social media. Which one of the takeaways I got from that session was social media. It's not social media. It's just media.
Media.
The idea. Well, not even new media. She said it's not social media, it's just media. In other words, you know, we use the term social media because, you know, we're used to media being radio, television, you know, newspaper, but that really now social media is the media.
Right.
And she went on to say that, you know, the number one platform right now for use is Facebook, second is Instagram, and she had stats, and it was just kind of amazing. But so that she definitely was the expert. I guess it was really those two things, just the ability as a speaker, and then obviously it was an expert in it, so it caught my attention. What about you? Have you been to a session you really got a lot out of?
Yeah, so the very first session I went to, it's right when the conference started, was Ron Baker's session. It was titled something like the connection between self-esteem and value pricing, or self-confidence and value pricing. And it may seem obvious, but it doesn't matter how much technique you have, how many tips and tricks you have about how to value price, or how to present your service. It doesn't matter what you have in terms of execution of techniques and all that stuff, if you're lacking the self-confidence. And it's that self-confidence component that he was really driving the point, using different examples and in the connection in terms of how not having that self-esteem can really drive to devaluing your services, or you devaluing yourself. Most important thing is you are your first customer. So you
Definitely.
Are your first customer.
Yes. You have to believe in your value before anybody else will.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that to me was really impactful. He showed a couple of videos that were really good. What about you had a session called Yes And? What is that all about?
Yeah, the title of that session was so confusing. You know, sometimes you turn in a title and then it gets changed a little bit. So the title I'm using is The Art of Engaging Customer Dialogue. Basically, how do you talk to a customer in a way that allows you to not only understand what they need, but why they need it. And we were talking not only about big concept of, you know, I literally started the session with the slide, why? In other words, why do we ask why? And then we drilled down from there into how do you ask why, and some techniques for managing that, managing the meeting, having the conversation, and so forth. By the way, before I forget, I did pull up the name of that speaker, and then my phone went dark, so now I'm killing time trying to get my phone to log in. It was Sonia Razul from Unique Markets. So really, really good session. So we were talking about that, and I felt like it went well. First of all, I was joking with my wife. I was like, man, I had trouble finding the room I was in. I was like way down at the far end of the convention center. I told my wife, I said, nobody is going to accidentally come into my session. The only people that were there are the people that wanted to be.
Intentionally.
Right. Exactly. Right. And so, yeah, what would you say, 100 people or so, about like that, maybe a little more. Yep. Couple things we did that are always fun. We did a live demonstration of a value conversation. This first time I've ever had a guest from the audience come up and do that, and so that was a little risky. Fortunately, the person who did it, her name's Kat, did a great job.
Yep.
And then you know, we had people do a triad exercise, which I always get good feedback on that. So you did a session yesterday on video marketing, right?
Yep.
So
yep.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my session was called Creating Effective Marketing Videos. And I've done marketing classes already for a couple of years, marketing, social media, content marketing, and video editing classes. But this time around, it was the same content, but we changed the title a little bit. We added the word effective in it. And the word effective basically drove me to take a different path to teaching it. So this year, I wanted to not so much about the how, but more about the actual creative process that goes behind thinking, you know, what my YouTube channel is going to look like, what my Facebook live videos are going to look like, what is the strategy that I'm going to put together before I create the content, before I create the videos, so it achieves a specific goal. And when it does achieve that specific goal, at that point, it becomes effective. Because a lot of folks think it's about being efficient and just pumping out as much videos as possible, as much content as possible. And that doesn't really work that well. Like, I have 500 videos, and it was like 70% of my views come from two of them. So I have two very effective videos and 498 not so effective, but they're efficient at giving me the bragging rights of that 500 number. So I was going to teach people that, and this is just what I learned. I don't know what the right answer is, but I can tell you for sure, with experience, to tell you that it would be much better that I would have made maybe 3, 4, or 5 more of that exact same video, or that those 2 or 3 videos that are getting all my views, than spending all the time of making all the 400 and almost 500 other videos. So I think that that's an area that I want people to think about, is, you know, how to become effective. So I'm going to deep dive a little bit into it, if you don't mind. Let's go a little bit deep dive into it. So I came up with this concept about the 6. This is my own concept, you know, kind of a hosh-posh Frankenstein of multiple concepts. But I call
Hectorpedia.
We'll call it Hectorpedia. The 6. So these are the 6 W's of basic video marketing. Right? You ready for that?
3 of them are WWW, right?
Right. So the first one is who. Okay. Who is your target client? I want you, before you create a video, before you start your channel, think about who's the person who's sitting down in a computer and hitting play. Who's the person with the phone, hit play, who that person is? What's that persona? Who's your target client, right?
Now, did you get into how do you determine who, if you're not sure? Did you touch
no,
on that?
No, we didn't have time for that.
All right. That's another video.
That is another video. Figuring out your target client, it's another video. But we talked a little bit about niche and specialization, but more like, think about who that person is. Is it a CEO? Is it a CFO? Is it a CPA? Is it something else that starts with a C? is it a self-employed individual? Is it a student? Is it a working mom? Is it the manager of a landscaping business? Is it a startup? Whatever it is, you have to figure out who that person is, because then you also have to get into their mind. And what are they thinking? What are their problems? What questions are they asking? So that is the what. So what questions are they asking? What solutions are they looking for? So you want to answer that question. So once you answer the who, you know who the person watching. Once you answer the what questions are they looking answers for? Okay, then I think of the where, right? The where is, where am I going to post my videos? Is it going to be YouTube only? Is it going to be YouTube and Facebook? Is it going to be YouTube and Facebook with 2 different recordings, because they're 2 different target markets? And maybe Facebook will be vertical video and YouTube will be horizontal video, something like that. So just think about not one size fits all. It could be Instagram. You could also take a YouTube video, post it into a blog post in your own website. You can take a YouTube video and embed it into a LinkedIn article. So we talked about the wheres. You know, think about the wheres. And that where is the same where your who hangs out in. Right?
Now, this is not what you wear, it's where you post it. I just, a little translation there.
Right, W-H-E-R-E, where. We're good?
There you go.
Okay.
So not now, W-E-A-R or W-A-R-E, but W-H-E-R-E.
And then we have the why, right? Number one, why are you making that video? So why? And viewers need to know what your motivation is behind the video. right? Because they're so used to all these video ads that are just ads. And if you don't clearly state why you're making the video, then people get a bit skeptical and they think that there's an ad or some sort of commercial agenda behind it. So you want to state your why very early on and say, this is why I make the video. This is why I help who I help. This is why I want you to solve this problem, that sort of
right.
thing. Yeah. Then we have the how. Okay. How is how can people engage with you later on? How can they engage with your content later on? You also have to keep in mind that most of this content is free and folks are expecting even the next step to be free. You know, so people want that video to answer, okay, I got the concept, I learned the concept, how can I go deeper? And you want to give someone always that second, right? You want to give someone that second step. So
I got a question for you. Can the second step be like homework? Like, you know, you say, look, if you want to go deeper, go do this. Here's an exercise for them. Or are you talking about like another resource to go to or another video you do? What do you mean by second step?
Yeah, it could be anything. So it could either be second step, read this article, read this ebook, read this PDF, right? Second step, email me your questions so I can send you in the right direction, right? Second step, go to my website and take this quiz. You know what I mean? So second step, call my office and set up a 50-minute conversation. This is still free, right? So the first step, which is your first content, is free, and the second step needs to be free. And then the third step is going to be that last question, which so we covered about who, why, when. So it's really important that you have timing elements in your content marketing, that you understand, think of it as a funnel, right? So they come in and they discover your channel, right? And they're coming down the funnel and they watch your first video and then they like your content, they subscribe, and they go a little bit deeper into that second step, right? And then once they get to that bottom of the funnel, that's when you close the deal. And it's really important for people to know that there's a timing factor. You always want to assume that the content that you're creating is going to be for free for everyone, but everyone will become your customer at some point. It's just a matter of when.
So when you talk about timing, it sounds like to me you're kind of taking how into account and going, okay, so if the video is step one and you're watching it now, that would be the when,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Then that call to action at the end that you mentioned would be step two, and so maybe when would they do that? But you're also saying, think of it even further down, if they take step one and step two, what's step three? So in other words, when you're making step one, you already know what step three in the sequence is.
Yeah, so...
Or what the desire is. Now, will the customer always follow that? No. But you may decide, okay, the sequence is do a video, send them to download a PDF and give us their email address, and third, you know, then we're going to start sending them a 7-part email campaign that ends in a call to action to buy our online video course or to book something, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And a lot of folks start creating video because everybody tells them that they need to or they should.
Like Hector.
Exactly. But then they don't have an end in mind. And then what ends up happening is the process feels like they're stuck. Like, I created the video, I'm creating videos, maybe I'm getting some watchers, but then nothing's happening.
Yep.
And I think the biggest challenge and where people do things seeking that immediate gratification. So that's a really important point I wanted to drive home, which is this is a long game. Content-based marketing is a long game. It takes a very long time for you to build trust with someone. And not always you get the chance to hang out, have lunch, and make that personal connection. When you do it virtually, this could happen over years. People may need to listen to your content and watch you for 5 years until they say, I think I'm ready to buy from that person. And that's a very difficult concept for some accountants or even any business owner to grasp because they're looking for that immediate gratification. So in my opinion, if you're going to be doing it, any sort of content marketing, whether it's podcasts, video, blogs, whatever it is, they need to have the long game mentality and know that there's sort of something happening in the horizon, but just keep at it. And don't worry, that goodwill pays off over time.
Well, and I'll add to that, I think, if you have no social media marketing, so you've done no Facebook, no Instagram.
Media.
What'd I say?
You said social media.
I did. So if you've done no online, if you've done no media,
right?
Okay, so no Facebook, no Instagram, no podcast, no video, you know, no nothing, then yeah, it will take time. But realize most of us already have at least one social, there we go again, one media platform right. where we have some type of impact. And in that case,
you can start another one and leverage it quicker because you've already got people on one. So, for example, I've got the podcast. Even though I haven't produced an episode in a while, I still have people who listen to those, still have people coming up to it. So I've already got an audience that if I wanted to start email or something else, I do have an audience that I can go to. I just need to let them know I'm there.
That's right.
So that would be my only comment is I doubt – well, let me ask you because my opinion doesn't matter as much as yours. So, would you say most of the people that were in the room already have some foothold? We'll call it a foothold, like, you know, like when you're invading a new, you know, an area, you've already got a foothold somewhere, somehow, or not? You think most people start from scratch?
Yeah, I did ask, you know, hey, raise your hand if you have a Facebook account, right? And everybody raised their hand.
Okay.
Or, yeah, there's probably a negligible 1%, 2% that didn't. But if I were to go through all of it, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, I think everybody would have raised their hands at some point.
Okay.
Okay. Most of it maybe is for personal purposes and don't have sort of a business version of it. That's fine, and that's probably very possible. But the idea that Kirk is alluding to is, okay, you got something, right? Make sure every single person in that circle, whatever that circle is, make sure they all know exactly what you're doing. Right. And then just go for another one and create that same message, maybe a little bit different, tweak it for that platform. As I mentioned, Instagram would be vertical video where YouTube would be horizontal video. Those are just the viewing habits. OK. And another really important insight, and I think you will appreciate this because you're a quasi audio engineer, is people that watch videos in YouTube are moving more towards just listening to the video on YouTube, which is a very interesting piece. Mm-hmm. People tell me, Hector, I listen to this. I watch your videos when I'm driving to work, and I'm telling them, I don't endorse that. I don't endorse that. And they say, no, Hector, I listen to it on the drive to work, which is an hour, and then I remember that you said two things, one at about minute 37 and one minute 56, and then when I get home, or I get to the office, I just fast forward and watch that part that I heard that seemed to be the one that I connected with. And that was just an interesting piece of insight. And when I went to a YouTubers conference a couple of months ago, they told me the exact same thing in a different way. What they told me is a lot of people watching videos are standing in queue, standing in line, and there's people around them. So they won't watch the video with the volume up. They're either going to watch the video silent and read the captions, or wear headphones. Now, the problem with headphones, guys, is that headphones are not very forgiving.
This is called a prop. Those of you who don't know, that's a prop.
Exactly. Everybody's listening. The headphones are not forgiving for background noise, for hiss and hums and all that stuff.
So they are or they're
not? They're not. They're not forgiving.
Right. Yeah.
That means that they're going to accentuate errors and just low quality audio. So if I were to have one piece of advice for you guys would be to invest in a microphone or figure out a good environment to get high quality audio before you start messing with video and video quality. So that's one of the really important points I wanted to drive.
Well, and I would underscore, wouldn't you agree that probably having, you know, I mean, first of all, if you got one of these in your pocket, you already have a decent turnaround. You know, if you got a
okay, let's do something meta. Go ahead, unlock the phone for a second. All right, watch this. Ready, guys. Ready for this.
All right. So I have no clue what we're doing here. This is totally unscripted. But my point is, you already have a good video capture device in your pocket. What you don't have is good audio capture on it. And so, say, in fact, we're doing this Facebook Live using Hector's iPhone. So now we do have an external light.
Watch this. This is exactly what the setup looks like. So I just get an idea where the setup looks like. So look at it on the phone. Check that out. Okay. So we have the phone on top of a tripod. That's on top of my book bag, literally. And then we have a little ring light here and a ring light here. And we have a USB connector cable. And then we're using the microphone that you're seeing us use. And this is a rig that costs less than $100.
Yep.
And so all these excuses about, let me turn the light back on. So now you see the difference between having a little $20 light. So all these excuses that I'm not going to get started creating content because I don't have the right microphone, because I can't afford a camera, I don't know what camera to buy. It's just excuses for the sake of excuses. You grab your phone, grab your microphone, and start creating content. And trust me, once you are adjusting and tweaking, it's much easier than when you're starting from zero.
Well, and the point I was going to make is you already own a video device. You just need a good audio capture device. And so the first thing I would invest in, obviously you need a stand probably, but once you get past a stand, which they're cheap, right? Once you get past a stand, what you really need is good audio quality. Because believe it or not, people will forgive poorer video quality than they will audio quality. Just and think about how long good audio has been around, okay? We're talking radio, records, rock and roll, you know, all that kind of stuff, all right? Video hasn't been that prevalent. It's a young generation. We're talking personal video, okay? We're not talking, you know, production, broadcast video. Although this setup gets you close to broadcast quality. But yes. Anyway, my point is, yeah, audio matters, and audio, I think, matters more than video quality. Content matters first. I'd say audio quality matters second.
That's right.
Would you agree? All right. Yeah. So, there was something I was going to ask you. What were we going to circle back to?
No, we were supposed to briefly talk about our sessions.
Well, I was going to say let's finish. Well, what?
No, we're good. Video marketing, we're good.
Okay, but I was going to say if that other topic, maybe do we want to tack it onto here? Or do we want to do?
Let's preview it here.
Like wrap this up, and then we'll just do another one on that one.
A completely separate episode.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. The boss has spoken. We're going to wrap it up. We spoke mostly about video marketing and my session.
We talked about Hector.
So now, what are we going to do now? So after we wrap this up, we're going to go live again.
Yeah, we're going to go live again.
We'll live again.
Because I have another topic.
And we're going to talk about something else completely different that I think is going to be pretty interesting.
Can I plug something real quick?
Yeah, plug it.
Okay.
Plug.
So this is Tuesday afternoon. Tomorrow morning on Wednesday, two group coaching sessions. Mark Wickersham is leading them along with myself, Ron Baker, one on value pricing for beginners, another on value pricing for experts. Look them up, come to the sessions. They're going to be impactful. So we'll see you there, and we'll see you in a few seconds for another episode.
All right, guys, welcome to the Art of Advisory. This is our second episode that we're recording live from San Jose, California at QuickBooks Connect. And there was a topic that we wanted to talk about. Let me tag Kirk.
First, I just want to point out the logo back there. This is free marketing.
Yeah.
I guess we're at their conference, so maybe. But then anyway, free marketing for QuickBooks because we have the logo in there.
That's right. Let's get a little bit closer here. So we're giving
Closer. I need to
take a shower. That's right.
All right.
So we're going to give QuickBooks a little bit of marketing here. So anyway, Kirk actually asked me to give him feedback on a session. Okay. So he taught a
that
session.
That was a mistake.
Yeah. So we taught a session on value pricing. He taught a session on value pricing. And he said, hey, what do you think about the session? And I told him everything that was great about it. And I told him your session was 99%. I'm going to give you the 1% that you would change. And I told Kirk, you have to think about when is a good time to go deep dive with details and when is a good time to just go broad, right? So maybe you want to talk about how the conversation started.
Yeah, so I've been doing training for probably 20 years, probably the first 15 on software training and the last 5 on teaching people how to price, particularly in the area of accounting, bookkeeping services. And one of the things that I've encountered when I've taught training is this idea that people have trouble going from the general skill to the specific situation. And I find the reverse is also true. People have trouble going from the specific situation and extracting the general skill. And so it's just always been a challenge. For example, the critique that Hector gave me on my session. I called somebody up out of the audience to help me do a role play, and literally it was unscripted, okay? And we role played a value conversation. Hector and I have done that on the show previously. But of course, you know, Hector, because he's an accountant and because he's, you know, taught some webinars and things of value pricing, he was kind of, you know, very clued in on a specific example. The one that we did there was, because it was unscripted, Hector's comment was it didn't feel as relevant as it could have been, I think. Would that be an accurate way to say it?
Yeah, it just stayed very broad. Like, you know, you ask the person, let's do a role play. You're the business owner. I'll be the advisor. and let's do a role play on a value conversation, right? And then,
right.
And
that was all I said. I didn't say any more than that. I let them come up with a business situation.
That's right.
So I just thought of something. So I want to ask you this. So basically, this is an AAR on my session. An AAR is an after action review, and I just realized that's what Hector and I are doing. Primarily, though, so an AAR, in case you don't know, comes out of the military, and it's where once a mission's complete. So my mission yesterday was to deliver the session. I delivered the session. So now we're doing the after action review. And so we would normally ask things like what went well, what didn't go well, what we learned from it. We're going to focus on what are we going to learn, right? So do you think it would have been better if I said, okay, I need a volunteer from the audience who can come up and role play a bookkeeping scenario with a customer and maybe fill in the blank on some more details so that I paint a more narrow picture? Do you think that would have helped?
Yes. So my suggestion was to set it up so when you're asking the questions and they're painting to you the story of this customer that's having pain points, and you as the advisor are trying to unlock the pains and unlock all the doors so that you can figure out where is it that you're going to provide value, that they think of a specific situation. The challenge is that if they stay broad because they fear getting into the details, because some folks think that getting down into the details is a rabbit hole, and sometimes it's a rabbit hole, which is true. But staying general would be good because it would connect with everyone. It would stay kosher with everyone. You know, so I think most folks prefer to stay broad in their examples so they don't lose anyone in the process. And I think that's what she did, and that's also what you did. I think it would have been much more impactful if they painted the picture like, okay, I'm a small business owner, I'm having cash flow issues, specifically my customers are paying me late and I'm having a challenge making payroll. Sometimes I have to borrow from my cousin to make my payroll, and then when I pay my cousin back, they want me to pay him 10% interest, which is higher than the bank.
10% interest, that's not family, that's highway robbery.
Exactly. So which is higher than what a bank would charge, but I'm not bankable. So like if you actually use those examples, I think most folks relate to, yeah, I know exactly the situation, or a client, or I heard those words before. And I think sometimes when you're learning, if you didn't walk into the learning conceptualizing that this is a generic, general learning, and I'm going to take this information as a generic concept, that then I'm going to have to then figure out how to apply it to a specific situation. Some folks get lost saying, I don't understand how this works for me in real life. So my suggestion was to just focus more on going into detail. And then you had a response to that.
Yeah. So the first takeaway that I'm going to really seriously take away, and this is going to impact how I do this session in the future, is number one, I'm going to provide more specifics about the particular situation. So I still might call up a volunteer from the audience, but I'm going to be much more specific. So I'm going to paint, and I'm not going to say just a bookkeeping or accounting, but I'm going to paint, you know, it's a cash flow, or there's a balance sheet or inventory or something. Get more specific. So in other words, really, I need to take, it's okay to, so one, I called up a volunteer, but I kind of need to take responsibility for providing a more concrete example, okay? But that being said, and this is where the question comes up, and I guess do you learn better from a general situation or a specific situation, or can you learn from either? And what are your thoughts on that? Because I guess I'm trying to take this out of the context of my session, but we were having this conversation last night about, you know, which is better? Is there a certain case when one is better than the other? And I'll just be honest. I don't have a lot. I can take a general situation, pull out the skill, and apply it to another. That is easy for me. But what I've realized is that's not as easy for other people, and I teach like it's easy for everybody.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a very loaded question. So the underlying question, if you don't mind me, I'll repeat it, just make sure I understood it correctly.
Tell me what you heard is what I said.
Right, exactly. Is it what is the better choice to take? To use generic concepts applicable to every situation as a tool for learning a new skill, or just take only one specific situation and deep dive using the tool as an example or illustration on how to use the tool.
I wonder if the better question is, how specific do we need to be?
Right.
I think that's really the question.
Yeah.
If you think of a number line here, right, with a continuum of completely general, you know, completely specific, where on that continuum do we need to fall to help people learn the best?
Yeah. I think that in a 1 hour session, you need to deep dive with three examples. So you can use generic concepts throughout, generic tools throughout, bullet points, tools, overarching principles, but then you have to use them in three different examples, right? The first example, to let people know that you're using a deep detail example. Maybe you'll connect with some, maybe you don't. The second one, so they go, oh, he's doing another example, maybe I should pay attention to this one. And the third one, you're just gonna do a capstone for the folks that are listening to the details and they can see it applied in three different situations. But the mix, just staying in the general concept and not use a specific example, makes it tough for some folks to connect with it right away. And granted, there are some people that learn best with just the theory, just the tools, just the principles, and they say, don't give me examples, I'll know how to apply the examples. That is true. But I think in our profession, in the accounting profession, we are very checklist driven, right? We are compliance driven. We reconcile a bank account.
OCD,
which, guys,
manual.
Remember, we reconcile bank accounts, which literally means that we tell the software that we're looking at the same thing we're looking at the paper statement. We're going line by line and making sure that there's a completeness in the work that we're doing. So when you teach a general concept that doesn't have this reconciliation concept, right, where you're telling me this, and then here's the example where you can actually check off and go, oh, these were the six overarching principles. This is the specific example where I applied the six overarching principles. So hopefully that makes sense.
Well, you know, it's interesting. As I was listening to you, you know, kind of expound about using three examples, I was going, okay, in an hour session, what that means is 30 minutes of content and three, you know, 6 to 8 minute examples.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So now I just take the session I did and split it in two.
Yeah. Cool.
I love ways to make content go further, so I can go with that. But in all seriousness, really this, and I think it's something we need to think about, because if when we learn, we require that it fit specifically our industry, specifically an example that we would encounter, I think we're limiting our ability to learn. So I guess I'm putting the challenge on both the presenter and the audience. I will accept the challenge that you've given me to, you know, try to dial it in tighter in this particular session that we're talking about. And at the same time, I would also challenge the audience to don't write off an example just because. So the example we were doing yesterday was a restaurant example, right? And the whole point of the dialogue, and this is probably why I didn't care about the topic so much, right, was basically the other participant would say something, and essentially I would go, and why is that? And then they would say something else, and I would go, and why is that? And it was literally just me showing an example of
peeling
the onion. How do you ask why in several different ways to drill down to what it really, really is?
Let's do an example of peeling the onion. If
okay,
mind.
Let's do it.
So ask me the first question. I'm the business owner. You be the advisor, and all you're gonna do is ask why, right? Okay, so you know, so you're gonna tell me your troubles, you know, what's keeping you up at night, right? You start with that, and then I'll start answering.
Okay, and I'm just gonna
just do why.
So all I say is why.
Well, why and variation.
Oh, okay, all right. So don't make it too academic. So okay. So Hector, thanks for calling me. How can I help you today?
Yeah, I need you to help me fix my inventory.
Why do you think your inventory needs fixing?
Well, I think it's off. When I look at my inventory, the numbers don't seem to be accurate, and it just drives me nuts. I need to have my inventory needs to be accurate.
So how do you know it's not accurate? What are you looking at, and what are you comparing it to?
I just have a feeling it isn't. Like I'm looking at the number. It says I have $200,000 in inventory, and when I look at my warehouse, I can't even fit $50,000 worth. So I don't even know where that valuation comes from. So when my inventory is off, my gross profit margins are off too. So that's really when I look at my gross profit margin, it's off. So I don't. So what my QuickBooks is telling me that I'm the percentage that I'm making is not the reality, and I'm just worried that number's not accurate.
So if I were to rephrase it, would you say that your biggest concern is you don't know if you're making money or how much?
I know I'm making money because there's money in my bank account, but I don't know how much I'm making per job.
Okay. So why is it important for you to know the valuation of your inventory? I mean, let me back up. Let me ask a different way. And by the way, sometimes I'm going to take a break for a second. Sometimes you will literally be in the middle of thinking to ask one question and you'll think of a better one and do exactly what I did. Say, you know what? Wait, let me ask it differently. So don't feel like you have to nail it, right? Feel free to go with the flow. When's the last time you did a physical inventory count?
We do it every year for our CPA, for our taxes.
Why don't you do it quarterly?
I just feel it feels a lot of work, and I also don't know. I don't think I know how to do it correctly. So it's maybe that's why I need you as the advisor to help me do it correctly. It just feels like I have to shut down for 3 days, and it just costs a lot of money also to shut down the business for 3 days.
So would you agree? Not only part of the problem is you don't know how much you're making. Okay, that's part of the issue. But the other issue is, we need to, like you said, figure out how to do an inventory so that you can do it more times, which means it'll be more accurate. It should be, right? And you don't shut down for 3 days because that's too big of an impact on your business.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Okay. So I'm curious. I want to get a feel.
So we've done three Ys so far.
Yeah.
I think we can still dig deeper.
Yeah, I was going to. Yeah. I was going to. He thought I was going on a tangent, but no, I'm still here with you.
Keep him in check.
Yeah. Well, vice versa, let me tell you. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. So, I want to get a gut feel for how far off do you think your inventory is? So, you just use the example of QBO is telling me I got 20,000 and I couldn't even fit 50,000 in the warehouse. So you're telling me you think your inventory is off by 75%?
I think I'm off by 150,000. But most importantly, when my inventory is off, my gross margin is off and my profit per job is off, and I need to know how much money I make per job.
Why do you need to know how much per job?
It'll make me feel good to know that I have jobs that are making me money, and I want to know the jobs that are not making me money. So when I see another one that looks just like it, so I don't take it. But most importantly, my salespeople who get paid on commission, they never really trust the commission number that we use, because we have to manually calculate gross margin in a spreadsheet instead of using the report that QuickBooks should be giving me.
So if you can't trust the numbers in your online accounting system, it kind of just creates doubt all the way across.
Yes.
And would you say that – how many salespeople do you have?
Five.
Okay. So out of your five salespeople, how many of them do you think have a 50% or greater doubt in the accuracy of the inventory?
Well, there was one in particular that every single month is a fight. You know, we come up with a number, and he has his own spreadsheet. He calculates his own spreadsheet because it's his paycheck. So he's going to want to make sure that his paycheck looks exactly the way he calculates based on our commission structure. So no matter what we do in the accounting department on calculating the gross profit per job to pay commission, he always comes back and gives us a different number. And he's the one that gives us the biggest issue, and he's also the biggest salesperson. He sells the most. Him on his own sells 30% of the jobs. Actually sold 30% of the jobs. He quit last month because we had a fight about commissions.
All right, you see how this is going? So we could keep digging deeper, but I want to point out something here. If you disagree with me, speak up. But in all honesty, based on this dialogue, I don't think it's not knowing how much you're making per job that's most important. It's the fact that your number one salesperson quit.
Exactly.
But did that come up anywhere? Did Hector call me to say, hey, my number one salesperson quit? No.
Right.
So this is an example.
Right. And this is a specific example that I just dealt with about a year ago. And I was learning the why conversation through you. And at that point, when the conversation went, I need you to fix my inventory, to I need you to help me retain talent, was such an important mindset shift for me to know that my job is not always to just answer the client's question. My job is to get to figure out what motivates the client to ask the question in the first place, because if I can then solve the underlying core of the motivation, I can go much deeper on the solution I can provide.
Well, and this was what the session yesterday was really all about, is about asking why and digging deeper. And so, for example, and, you know, Hector just mentioned, even though we're role-playing this, it's a real example he dealt with a year ago. You know, the client has self-diagnosed, right? The client has self-diagnosed it was an inventory problem.
Yeah.
It's not really an inventory problem. It's a compensation and trust problem. Okay, and that compensation and trust problem was now going to affect, you know, 30% of revenue because the salesperson left. But we have to peel the onion back in order to get those details.
Right.
So I'm going to do a tangent here. I just thought of an idea. I want to see what you think about it. Right. What if we did, so we do normally, what, an hour every week live on Facebook?
We do an hour live on Facebook. Okay. Right now we're probably going to go to 20 minutes.
20 yeah,
minutes.
Something like that. Yeah. What if we start doing a value conversation of the week? What if every week we take a portion of the show and we do a role play like this?
That would be fun.
In 3 months, we will have 12 examples online.
So that, I think that's exactly it. I think we just came up with a perfect way to illustrate that this is the perfect balance. Of.
Notice how you just took credit for my idea. You said we.
So, yeah, you're right. So it's a perfect balance. It's a perfect balance of theory and detail. We were talking about going in detail. I think those examples, like the inventory example, when I try to convince other professionals to do the why conversation and I use the same conceptual principles to do it, I don't get much buy-in. But when I use that specific example that I just used right now, people go, huh, because it's a detailed example that sounds like this, the conversation that I have every day. So actually, I love your idea and I think we should probably commit to that. I just have a value conversation every week.
VCW, value conversation of the week. You heard it here first. We can do VCW or WCW. I like VCW. That has a little more impact to it. So I think we're going to wrap this one up because I can just feel us getting really silly here, at least me. I don't know about him. But I do want to say this. I would love to hear your thoughts on how do you learn? Can you extract skills from general examples, or do you need more detailed examples? And where do you think you are on that continuum? So, you know, if one is as detailed as possible and 10 as generic as possible, do you feel like you're at 5, 7, 3? Love to hear some feedback on that. And we're going to keep poking at this. So you want to wrap us up?
No, I'll just say I'm really happy to see you again, Kirk. Hopefully I'll see you again on the next conference. And I'll see you next week.
There you go. Bye.